Welcome to Entrepreneur Showdown presents with your hosts, Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks.
Yeah, I love that fanfare intro that our sound team put together here at Entrepreneur Showdown Presents. I am Dan Franks, coming on in a minute, my co-host, Joe Cassandra, and hey, we're here. We've been talking about it for a few weeks. You guys have been asking us for a little more information, and here we are, Entrepreneur Showdown Presents, where every month, Joe and I pick a theme for the show, and then every Thursday during that month, we interview a fantastic entrepreneur that fits into that theme. So this month, it's Entrepreneur Showdown Presents Entertainment Entrepreneurs. And our entertainment entrepreneur for today's show is Amanda Pico. And Amanda Pico runs the Pico Group, fittingly enough. And they're a Broadway and off-Broadway marketing agency where they promote musicals in all sorts of marketing mediums, the traditional billboard and print media, but also are heavily utilizing online advertisements, videos, audio, pretty much anything you can think of. And we're super excited to share our interview with Amanda with all of you guys. But just briefly before we get to that, want to remind anyone who's returning listener or anybody who's new that the best place to go to find out more about this episode, this guest, and our show, and Joe and myself, is at entrepreneurshowdown.com. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday during this month of October 2013 for another entertainment entrepreneur interview. That's going to be fantastic. And just in general, every Thursday, every week for Entrepreneur Showdown Presents. But without wasting any more time, let's take you to Amanda Pico.
On this episode of Entrepreneur Showdown Presents, we're bringing on Amanda Pico. Amanda Pico is the founder of the, surprise, the Pico Group, a theatrical marketing and advertising agency for Broadway and off-Broadway in the Big Apple. She was recently named a VIP member of Who's Who for Excellence in Entertainment Marketing and also a pro at picking the Tony winners, as I found out. Amanda, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
I was going through and doing a lot of research on you, and a lot of people, they ask you who you think is going to win the Tonys, and everyone that you guessed or thought was going to win, you got it right, so you must be an expert at that type of thing.
Yeah, I can't believe I got it right. I should start playing the lotto more often.
There you go. Exactly. Well, I want to start off, you founded the Pico Group in February 2009, is that correct?
That's right.
And we all know what was going on in 2009. We had the worst economic crisis ever. So what are you doing trying to start a company during that time?
You know what? I guess I was a little off the wall, I suppose. I was I had just come from being a partner with another agency, and I was really looking to go off on my own, and it kind of didn't really matter to me what the economic climate was like out there. I just, I had a vision and I was just going to go for it.
Were there people that were telling you, hey, we're in a bad economy, stop trying to go do your own thing, just stay with your already the job that you had?
Yeah, there were definitely some naysayers out there, who, you know, kind of felt like I was a little crazy. And, I think I got from more than a couple people, you know, that they wouldn't be starting a company at that time if the shoe was on the other foot. But I guess I'm not like other people. I think that's also what kind of differentiates an entrepreneur from, you know, from other people.
Okay, so you started off, you were in Brooklyn College and you were doing acting and such, right?
That's right.
And you actually started off trying to be an actor, is that right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I did. I got my BFA in theater, in acting, and I performed for a couple of years and also directed, and I produced really small off Broadway shows in festivals and really small stages. And I started out kind of promoting those shows. I would go to the restaurants and the bars in the area and offer tickets to the people who worked there and, you know, ask them to put our posters up in the window and drop off flyers and try to get people into the theater. And it kind of occurred to me that I was doing marketing. And as I talked to more and more people, I realized that there was this whole business side of theater that I had absolutely no idea about whatsoever. And I kind of, you know, I kind of got bitten by that business of theater bug, and I really enjoyed marketing. So it kind of stuck with me.
I find it interesting, and Joe and I think can kind of draw comparisons to that story you just told, because he and I both have been in some way, shape, or form in the entertainment business before we broke into our full-time jobs. And I don't think either one of us saw maybe the business side as a viable concept. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that were doing the same thing as you that never were able to make that connection, like, hey, what I'm doing, I could actually do full-time and make a business out of. What do you think you saw in that that maybe other people don't?
Well, I think I always had a really kind of business mind. Even I think I was maybe a little bit too analytical as an actor and as a performer in general. And I think that something really intrigued me about helping to fill seats, helping to bring in ticket sales and audience members, and to view the art. And I think it was just really a good fit for me. I didn't realize it at first, and as I started doing some research, I realized that there's this, you know, there are offices filled with in advertising agencies, you know, just for theater, and offices filled with marketing people at nonprofit theater institutions. And I wound up a couple years after getting my bachelor's, I wound up getting an MFA in performing arts management. And it was there that I really met some amazing professionals within the industry who kind of sparked my interest. And really, it became very, very clear to me at that point that that the business side of things was definitely where my heart and my head were, rather than the performing.
So did you have any entrepreneurial experience or entrepreneurial aspirations before that? Or was it that aha moment that just kind of turned everything on right at once?
Well, I like to think I was, I kind of was an entrepreneur from a young age, but I never really did much about it. I started, this is going to sound a little crazy, but I started in elementary school. I won a mini grant. I think I was in fourth or fifth grade. I won a mini grant for a potpourri business.
Yeah.
And I think I was awarded, I don't know what it was, something like $500 to, you know, purchase all the supplies I needed and you know, give it my best go. And I did that, and we sold out of all of our product at all of the school fairs. So I think I always kind of had that in me. I just didn't really know that. I didn't know what it would turn into.
So after you got, I guess, the itch to kind of do the business side of it, you went and worked somewhere else, and when you were working there, were you doing basically what you're doing now just for someone else?
Yeah, so I've been doing this for about 12 years now, and I started out, I worked in different areas of the business side of theater. So I was doing marketing for some smaller shows and a festival, and then I did some contract negotiation work for a theater institution, and then I did some fundraising for some regional nonprofit theaters. And I kind of came back to marketing. And so I worked for a couple of years for a big Broadway marketing company, and worked on shows like Spamalot. And I helped with Chicago on Broadway and Phantom of the Opera and Inherit the Wind with Christopher Plummer and Brian Dennehy, and lots of Broadway shows, and also a ton of off-Broadway shows too. But yeah, I worked for a firm, and I was one of the account executives who, you know, had a roster of anywhere between 5 shows and 10 shows in a given season. And I really loved it. And I wound up kind of hopping around. I had a client who started a sort of sexy circus, like a more intimate version of Cirque du Soleil, in Manhattan. And they approached me about coming in-house and being their vice president of business development. And so I went there, and I worked for someone there. And then I left and became a partner at another agency that was just starting out. And and I really enjoyed that, and I had really incredible partners. But ultimately, I think I realized that I might be better suited to have no partners and to go at it alone and just, you know, see what could potentially lie ahead for me.
So when you first started off and you founded it in February 2009, how did you go about getting your first client? Did you take them from your old place of work?
I actually started with four clients. I had two clients that were brand new. I had one client who came with me from the other agency. And then I had a fourth client who I represented at my former agency, but in a different department. And this client stayed with that agency for those things that they were already doing, but hired me to do promotions and grassroots marketing. And that was Rock of Ages, which at the time was off-Broadway and was doing a transfer to Broadway. So they kept my former agency doing some digital work for them, and they hired me to do something completely different than I had ever done for them, which was the grassroots and promotions.
So when you're trying to market a show, what is, like, I guess, your pay structure? Do they just pay you a flat fee, or do they pay you by the hour, or do they pay you based on profits? How does that work?
Well, it's different for the different types of services. So the Pico Group is a full service advertising and marketing agency. So we're really a one-stop shop. We do everything from designing the logo to designing the website to designing all of the print ads and outdoor and TV ads and recording the radio commercials and doing all of the online banners and the HTML e-blasts. And we also do the grassroots marketing and promotions and events, like, you know, when you see people performing at Broadway and Bryant Park, or you see a presentation with a branded window at, you know, Macy's. And then we do social media strategy and development. So basically, we do media buying, which is, you know, all of the paid advertisements. So if it's a paid advertisement and they're hiring us for that, then we make a commission. We make 15% commission off of the gross advertising price, which is pretty standard across the board in the industry. If they're hiring us for promotions or grassroots or social media, they pay us a flat weekly fee, depending on how many seats are in the theater. And then if they're paying us for ad production and design of the advertisements, then they pay us an hourly fee. So we kind of have several different fee structures built in depending on what services they require. And most of our clients hire us for all of it. So we're invoicing them in three different ways.
One of the things I found interesting when doing research for this interview was you really pride yourself and your group on being super dynamic and flexible and changing with the times almost, you know, at a drop of a hat. Is this one of the things that kind of encouraged you to break off from one of those larger firms that I'm guessing can't do those same things, and maybe will keep you in the future from trying to grow to such a large level?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I really am. I'm a risk taker, and I really enjoy challenges. And I have a lot of respect for what's been done in the past. And I see great value in keeping some things, you know, status quo. But I also really like to see what's happening, keep my finger on the pulse of things, and be able to change and grow and evolve. And so that is something that, going off on my own without any partners, and I didn't accept any investors either for this reason. I really wanted to be able to do what I thought was right and to be able to take risks with my clients and work with clients who are willing to take risks like that with me. So being selective with my clients as well, which I wouldn't have had the luxury of doing had I not been on my own.
And something I noticed you pointed out was that your specific industry just changes so much from, I think, one of the articles you wrote. You said over 5 years, almost everything had changed just over the course of 5 years since starting. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen, and how have you adapted to those changes?
Well, social media, I would say, is one of the biggest changes. You know, it changes, I feel like, almost every day. There's, you know, there's new platforms, and the platforms that are existing are trying to up their A game even further. You know, there's all different platforms are using video now. And 5 years ago, video was really just starting out in the industry. You know, we were doing audience testimonials, you know, where you see TV commercials with people who are of all, you know, ages and ethnicities saying how great they thought the show was. But now we do Vine videos, and we do, you know, we post small 15-second videos on things and 30-second videos. And we use YouTube like crazy now. So there, that's really changed. Also, when I first started out, you know, Facebook wasn't really what Facebook is now. And what we do with Facebook now, and now there's Twitter, is we create communities and we create word of mouth on these social media platforms, where before we were really just kind of learning about them and figuring out what could potentially work. Now we know that it's, you know, a massive word of mouth vehicle for us, which does affect the awareness of the show in a much, much larger way than ever before.
Yeah, and I got to say, your website is one of the best websites we've seen just while looking, you know, doing research for the various entrepreneurs that we interview. And you, like you said, you have all kinds of videos on YouTube. And one of the things that Joe and I really got a kick out of when we were looking into you and the company was the Office spoof that you guys did on April Fool's. We thought that was about the best thing we've ever seen. That was really funny. What made you guys want to do that?
Thank you for saying that. I love that video. you know, we were thinking about fun things that we could do in the office to connect with our clients and to connect with potential clients. And we had a brainstorm session, and this April Fool's thing came up, and it was kind of undeniable. And we thought it would be just hilarious to create this video and say that we had a reality TV show. And what's really funny is that we sent it out in an e-blast to our list, and several people didn't even realize that it was an April Fool's joke. I got so many emails from people congratulating me on getting a reality TV show, and people commenting like, of course you got a reality TV show. Yeah, congrats. So, I mean, it was just really funny. And I still like to look at that video. We're working on a new video that we're actually going to send out in about a week and a half, and I am so stoked about it. So I'll have
to. That's awesome.
Yeah, we watched it and we're like, this is so great. And I was like, I want to find the next one. And there wasn't another one. And I was kind of depressed for a little bit because it was great. I just loved watching it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, the next one isn't like The Office. It's totally different, but it's going to be awesome. Our one of our video editors, he got about 85% of it done today, and I was just freaking out watching it before I left the office today. So, it's going to be epic.
Let's just talk about, say, just branding for you. I mean, if you type in Amanda Pico on Google, like the first 5 pages of Google, like all the links are about you, or you're in some interview, or you're on some video.
Yeah, big time props to you. That's awesome. You're the first person we've seen that just dominates like that.
Like if there were any other Amanda Picos out there, like they're totally screwed. They're never going to get on the front page of Google. But like most people that we research, like they'll be like in the first page and a little bit in the second page, but you just like totally take up like 5-6 pages of it. What is your strategy for that type of thing?
Thank you. Well, we have an amazing digital team on board in the office. My team really all around is just so spectacular. Our digital team goes through and, you know, they do all of the search engine optimization. They, you know, we used to have Google AdWords running for a little while, but we stopped those. They go in and they make sure that everything, you know, all of our social media platforms are linked to each other. Everything that we're doing is in Google Plus. You know, we send through, when we do web updates, we send through the updates and contact all of the search engines like Google and Yahoo and Bing. We send information to them so that they can update their search engines more quickly than when they would normally crawl the site. So we're really on it. We're a group of really hungry people who want more and more and more, and we're always looking at what else is possible and what more is there. And we're never really satisfied. It's sort of in all of our blood in the office. And so whenever something new comes up, you know, our digital team is constantly reading about what new trends are happening, and they're bringing new ideas to us. So anytime we can leverage something where the Pico Group is involved, or I'm involved, or a member of the team is involved, we really do try to leverage that on all platforms and make sure that everything is consistent and working in our benefit. And to be honest, we do the same for all of our clients as well. It's not just like we focus on our company. If anything, we focus on the Pico Group last and our clients first.
So just for you, I guess personally, how is that, like, getting all that exposure? Like, you've been on Fox, you've been on Fast Company, you've been on all these different sites, submitting content or being interviewed or whatnot. What dividends have you seen from that, just you personally?
I guess, you know, the theater industry is really it's really a tight-knit small community, and I haven't seen anything directly come from any of the publicity we've gotten as a company or as me as the CEO and founder of the company. But people in the industry definitely are aware that we're out there. I do get some, you know, I do get comments from time to time like, oh, I saw you. I can't believe you got all of the Tony nominations right. Who are you? Kind of a thing. But I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen any new business that I could directly track from any of that stuff.
Well, let's talk about the industry you're in, because that's obviously one of the things that sets you apart from some of the other guests that we've had. And you're in an industry where I saw you quoted to say 80% of your clients don't turn a profit, or maybe not your clients, but in the industry overall. So to me, that kind of means maybe if you can get, you know, instead of 20%, 25% of your clients to turn a profit, that's better than the industry average. Meanwhile, most of the people we interview, anything less than, you know, 90%, it's a failure. How do you kind of change things, like other industries? How do you do things differently because of this type of statistic or metric?
Yeah, theater is a really interesting world because it costs a lot to put a piece of theater on a stage. You know, you have to, you capitalize millions and millions of dollars, if it's a Broadway play, you'll capitalize at, you know, $3 to $4 million, maybe $5 million if it's a really big play. If it's a musical, you're capitalizing at between $10 and $12 million normally. There are some exceptions, but it costs so much to make the show happen, and the salaries of all of the union reps, you know, from crew to actors, to stage managers, to directors, to choreographers, etc., and then the advertising, especially in New York City, is just so expensive that when you get down to it, you're spending heaps and heaps of money to create it and to market and advertise the piece, but you're only charging $100 a ticket. So it really is hard to make a profit back when that's your situation. So what we try to do is, at the Pico Group, we really are looking at being strategic and targeted. So instead of the quote unquote spray and pray method, or the throw spaghetti at the wall and hope something sticks, we really look at data driven strategy. So who's coming to the show? Who are we missing out on? Why are they coming? Who's buying the tickets? Who are they bringing with them? Where did they hear about the show? What made them buy tickets? Are they coming back? Why do they love it so much? And how do we turn these people into brand ambassadors? So really being smart with the spending, and being super strategic and targeted about who the audience is, and how do we get the biggest bang for our buck, so that we're advertising in the places that those early adopters are looking and going to buy tickets quickly, and potentially, you know, hopefully spread the word of mouth, beyond that. So it really is, it's a challenge, but it's a really fun challenge. And, you know, whenever you're talking about promoting artwork, that's just something that is so passionate. I'm so passionate about that.
Well, staying on the same topic, I find it interesting that the clients that you're promoting for, unlike other industries, a lot of them are just, they're just there out of thin air. They don't have any pre-existing brand loyalty. No one's ever heard of this name or this show before. So that presents a super, I guess, tricky situation, we would say, looking from the outside. But for you, it's somewhat normal. But what are kind of the best methods you use to take this brand from zero to hero so quickly to get it, you know, in people's eyes and ears and mouths?
Yeah, that's a really good point. They really do. Every show is essentially starting from scratch with no brand awareness, you know, unless in some cases they're doing an out-of-town workshop, you know, they're putting the show on in another city and then transferring it to New York City. But what we start with is a really great logo that's going to capture the attention and create the energy of the show and the experience of the show for the audience member before they ever enter the theater. So the branding is number one. The logo is number one. The website is number two, making sure that the website is really easy and clear and also has some bells and whistles so that people can feel like they're interacting. And then, you know, we start on social media as early as we can. And sometimes that's not very early. Sometimes that's only a couple of months in advance of the show. But when we have the luxury of starting earlier than that, we definitely jump on it, because we want to start a following, and the easiest way to do that is via social media. And then past that, we're looking at a very targeted, strategic ad spend so that, you know, if the audience is New York Times readers, we're running print ads in the New York Times, we're running radio ads on New York Public Radio. We're running web banners on, you know, websites where those readers and those listeners go to, and we're kind of layering the number of impressions. You know, in New York City, it's really tough to stand out from the crowd. So, and there's so much advertising, especially in Times Square. You can, you know, stand in the middle of Times Square and have like 20,000 different brands advertising to you at one moment. So we really do try to hit one target or two target audiences multiple times so that we create an impression-based marketing campaign where they feel like they've seen us everywhere. Like they feel like we've just taken over Times Square or we've taken over the West Village, and they see us on their way to work and in the newspaper they're reading, in the magazine they're reading, on their way home, and they turn on the TV and we're on the station they're watching. And so it really is about being very smart and strategic with the dollars and with our social media campaigns as well.
But if it is a new show, like Dan says, like not like a Phantom of the Opera where people have already know who the target audience is for that, for a new show that just came out, that was just written, how do you know who the target audience is? Do you kind of test different things, or do you just kind of look at, oh, okay, this is a musical, it'll probably go for older people, not as much younger people? Like, how does that work?
In New York City, there's a typical theater goer, and we get a lot of our data and statistics from the Broadway League, which publishes an annual review of surveys of audience members from all of the different Broadway shows. And it basically talks about the average ticket buying person. And for Broadway, the average ticket goer is a woman in her 40s who lives in Manhattan and sees 15 or more shows a year. And we, you know, can collect information from other shows that we're working on who have a history to be able to validate where the audiences are coming from. And it's there that we're able to create a strategic media plan based on what we think we know about the audience who's going to respond most quickly and in the best way to the specific piece. So if it's a really serious piece, it's a really serious play, we're looking at who went to see the last, you know, five serious plays in the past year, and what do we know about those people, and let's get a plan together to go after them because they're the low-hanging fruit. They're the people who will come to the show first. If it's a big old musical and it's family friendly, then we're looking at what big old musicals that are family friendly are running right now and who has their audience been in the last year, and let's try and target those people. So there is you know, there is a major strategy to get that in. Of course, there's always niche groups. You know, if a show has a specific theme, and, you know, say the theme is you know, therapy, it's a comedy about therapy, then, you know, yes, the niche audience will be therapists and psychoanalysts and all that stuff. But they're really sort of the next circle in the concentric circle of marketing. The first one is, let's get those theater goers who see 15 shows a year or more, who live in Manhattan and can walk to the theater. Let's get them in first. And then we can, once we have their butts in seats and we have their word of mouth, we can start focusing on who our other targets might be and test those waters out a little bit.
So for people who are listening who may have their own business, right now, should they spend a lot of time, because maybe they are just working by themselves, they don't have all these different studies, should they spend time going out and trying to collect research on who their target audience is if they have just a small team?
Yes, I would definitely recommend that. We do a lot of research even still, but it really is important for everyone, no matter what the business is, to understand who they're marketing to, because different people want to be marketed to in different ways. So if you're finding that your audience is all on Facebook or all on Twitter, you're going to communicate with them in a certain way on Facebook versus Twitter. If you're realizing that your audience is a demographic that isn't really on social media, but instead reads three publications every single week, then you want to make sure you're putting ads in there and looking at what the other ads look like and what the tone is and how these people like to be spoken to and marketed to. So it is very important, no matter what your product is, to be very strategic and targeted and understand who your audience is before you just start marketing and praying that something's going to work for you.
So what is the current trend in the Broadway show right now? I know the shows like Book of Mormon just came through Dallas and I saw it and it was fantastic. And I think from looking at some of the other shows that are starting off up there, it seems like maybe a trend towards the more edgy shows might be happening. Is that something you see, and how is that going to change things?
Well, right now there's always sort of a mix. I think that Book of Mormon definitely created a whole new category for Broadway, and I think also gave people permission to write things like that, to invest in shows like that that might not be status quo, really serious drama or big family musical. But there's always going to be a mix. You know, there will always be the really different shows like the Stomps and the Blue Man Groups of the world. And then there will be the plays like The Glass Menagerie, which is opening this fall, and Betrayal, which is a play as well. But there will always be a mix of things, I think. This, you know, Wicked has been running for years. Avenue Q definitely paved the way for a Book of Mormon to come in, I think. Avenue Q is celebrating 10 years on the stage. It's running off-Broadway right now. It transferred from Broadway to off-Broadway. I think that the Book of Mormon definitely created a new playing field for people. But, you know, great shows like that are definitely hard to come by. So I don't know. I don't know when we'll see the next Book of Mormon, but I'm sure that people will be more receptive to creating a piece like that and potentially investing in and producing it for the stage in the future.
Since you mentioned Betrayal, I actually played Jerry in college in Betrayal. So
love it.
I love
it. Hey, Joe, do a number for us from it.
I can't even remember what I yesterday. I can't remember.
Oh, no, you don't remember your lines, your big monologue.
Oh, there was a couple of them, but it was one of my favorite shows. I loved it. Well, I wanted to stick on the topic of these kind of taboo type shows. Do you guys ever try and do maybe some, I guess, like negative type marketing where, the guy who wrote the Beers in Hell book, I forgot his name again, but he did
Tucker Max.
Tucker Max, there you go. He does a lot of like negative marketing, like don't let your kids see my site or something. And of course, kids are going to go see it. Do you ever do that kind of thing for like these edgier shows?
It is used sometimes, but those are really, they're seen as sort of like teaser campaigns in our world. And because the budgets on Broadway and off Broadway are so much smaller than that of a product, the shows don't normally have extra money to kind of do things like that. So when a show has additional funds to be able to do a teaser campaign, which is really fun and mysterious and thought provoking. We definitely try to do things like that. But I would say the vast majority of productions don't really have the budgets to try things like that.
Well, you mentioned that you guys still do a bunch of media buys and you do TV and radio and billboards and all of that. But other than social media, what other new media platforms are you guys finding success in?
Well, we're actually working now with a couple of different tracking systems, which have been great, like Sprout Social, Zoom, Quantcast, and we're also starting to use MediaMind for conversion tracking. So there's this whole new world available to us where we can track all of the ticket sales online from various advertising platforms. So if we run web banners on Playbill.com or TheaterMania.com or NewYorkTimes.com, we can actually track where, you know, someone clicking on the web banner, coming to our website, buying a ticket all the way through to charging their credit card. And that's something that's definitely newer lately. So there are different companies that are popping up all the time that allow you even more awareness of what's going on. So we're experimenting with that right now. We're working with Peter and the Starcatcher, which ran on Broadway and won 5 Tony Awards and transferred off Broadway. And so we're doing a lot of conversion tracking for that show, which has been just really fun.
So let's look at something that maybe along in the past 4+ years or so, was there ever a time that you guys were, I don't know, close to bankruptcy or people started leaving? Was there any type of story like that?
We've never been close to bankruptcy. Yeah, we've always been we've been fine financially since we started. But, you know, I will say that because of the nature of our industry and people hop around from place to place, and even though this is the business side of theater, a lot of the people who get into the business side of theater are artists at heart. We definitely have ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys in our office with staff. So what I normally say is pretty much every spring we go through a spring cleaning where we really look at who's working and what they're bringing to the table and if we feel like they're a right culture fit for the company anymore. And we'll go through a spring cleaning at the Pico Group where a bunch of people will either decide that it's time for them to go or we'll decide it for them. So that's been interesting to kind of see that trend. But I do think it's necessary because, like I said earlier, I'm really all about learning and growing and evolving and making sure that we're on the cutting edge. And as soon as someone works for me who is getting a little tired and isn't enjoying themselves anymore, it really is time for them to move on.
So do you ever feel that sometimes they just see you as kind of like a stepping stone to something else and maybe they're not putting in as much effort as you hope they would?
Yeah, I think for any job, you're looking at your career and trying to figure out what you want to do. I mean, I certainly didn't know I was going to start a company on my own when I was working for other people. I was happy where I was and just wanting more. But I have no problem being a stepping stone where, you know, I train my team really well. We're a really supportive and fun bunch, and I'm happy for them to move on and realize their own dreams. And also on the same hand, we're really grateful for any time they want to put in. So even if they're only hungry and excited for 6 months and then they're like, I think I'm over this, it's probably better for them to go on to their next adventure so that we can get someone who's excited again into that position.
I want to talk about the ways that you're getting the word out about your company, because we've talked about how you're marketing the clients that you're working for. And we talked about you kind of, you know, the in-house SEO and all that. But you really are finding ways to write articles for other websites that drive traffic back to your company, or do these television interviews, or do interviews like this with us or with other radio shows or with the crazy question mark shirt guy. That was Joe and I watched that. That was a little weird, but I won't go there.
Matthew Lesko, he's so nice.
Yeah, that was crazy. Anyways, what are your goals for doing all these, and what do you feel like you really get out of it just kind of being everywhere at once?
Well, because I'm in marketing, I definitely see the value in marketing the company. And I never really actively marketed the company. I only just started doing little bits and pieces of that about a couple of months ago, but I never really did it before. The previous articles and like Fast Company and things like that, they approached me kind of out of the blue, and I wasn't even aware that, you know, any of it was kind of going on. So, but recently I've been doing marketing for the company, and what I'd like to do is continue to do really good work for our clients, and also get some bigger clients where we can take some more risks and do bigger plans, and be more strategic and more targeted than we've been able to be before. So I'm really looking to attract people and clients who want to take risks and learn and grow and really have a great time working with us. So people who are on the same wavelength as me, and it's such a small industry, and yet there are so many people who I've never worked with before. So I really am looking at expanding our horizon with our client base.
So for a company that a small business that may have, like, they have client base and they rely on referrals, or they rely on trying to go out and find new clients, do you recommend all those type of small businesses to have some sort of, I guess, blog, or trying to guest post places so you can get traffic back to their site? Just because I know a lot of clientele businesses, sometimes they just rely on referrals, and that can work for a while, but I always think there could be like inbound marketing opportunities that maybe sometimes they miss.
Yes, definitely. I would say as many other websites that can link back to yours is just, it's great for traffic referrals. It's great for awareness. The more you can do on social media to leverage what you're doing and tagging the other people involved and creating a conversation with them so that it goes out to the feeds of their followers and their fans and their friends. The more you can do that, the more people know about you. And what marketing really also is creating word of mouth and brand ambassadors from people so that you create a larger referral net. I often talk about the referral of a lifetime, that book. And I mention that to people whenever I'm talking about how can they do marketing for their businesses or for their shows if they can't afford to hire us. And, life really is about referrals. You know, even Coca-Cola, you're in the movie theater and their branding is everywhere and you're seeing everyone get a Coke, you're going to get a Coke too. And that's part of word of mouth and referral marketing as well. So the more you can be out there and have more and more people aware of you, the better it is for your business, for any product and for any show.
So are you saying that basically that, hey, even if you go on like these, like you go on Fox, even if you're not even trying to get new clients, you're just trying to build a positive brand and trying to build that, I guess, like be everywhere type aura?
That's right. And because those things live way beyond when you do them. So maybe no one saw me on Fox that morning, but people are still watching that video and they're still commenting to me that they saw it. So every little seed that you can plant helps you in your cause to create more and more brand ambassadors and more buzz about you.
Well, we just have a couple more questions. I want to jump back, I guess, to the type of shows that you market for. Because I know you talked about a little about the pay structure, but does the success of the show, do you guys care that much about it? I know, like, if it lasts longer, then you get paid per month more. But I guess up front, does it matter if that first month that they sell out or don't sell out?
Right. So we get paid. Right. So our fee structure, we get paid on a weekly basis for marketing and social media, and we make commissions from advertising and hourly fees for design. It matters to us for several reasons. We're not making a percentage of their profits ever, but the longer it runs, the longer we get paid. The longer it runs, the better our reputation is because we're marketing a hit. And we had some hand in that. And also, you know, the longer it runs, the more advertising they'll do as well. So we wind up making more advertising commissions based on how long it runs, because they continually do, you know, seasonal ads and maintenance ads and all of that stuff. So if we have a show that opens and closes, then we kind of lose out on all that.
Love it. Well, Amanda, we appreciate you coming on. Where can we go to find out about you, or if you have any interview that you've been on that you'd like other people to hear? And of course, we'll link to your office episode, but where else can they find you in the Pico Group?
They can find us at thepicogroup.com. That's P-E-K-O-E. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at the Pico Group as well.
Love it. Well, we thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Entrepreneur Showdown Presents. Tune in every Thursday morning for another amazing interview. To hear all the past episodes and find out more, visit EntrepreneurShowdown.com.